to the political cesspool known across the South and worldwide as the South's foremost populist conservative radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host for tonight, James Edwards.
Everyone to the political cesspool, where the nasty business of politics flushes into the mainstream media. Good evening, everyone. I'm Bill Rowland, tonight substituting for James Edwards, who is taking some time off with his family, and so we wish him the best tonight, but he is taking a little personal time, so it'll be just you and me tonight. And tonight's show is brought to you in part by the Council of Conservative Citizens, for 20 years the true voice of the American right. Visit the Council of Conservative Citizens website at www.cofcc.org. We have three exciting guests tonight. In our first segment, historian Dr. Kevin Gutzmann will discuss his book, Who Killed the Constitution? And that certainly is very relevant in our times right now as we begin the grope into the Obama administration and what that will mean in terms of our constitutional rights. In the second hour, Philip Haydad will join us to talk about his work on a new book and film about Ron Paul entitled Ron Paul Speaks. So we're certainly looking forward to that interview with Mr. Haydad, who is works in film and in publishing as well. So this book and film are a joint project, I would suppose, but we'll get into that with Mr. Haydad in the second hour. And in the third hour, the Big Bang. Now, I was prepared to tell you who is supposed to be our guest in the third hour, a taped interview, but right now, due to some technical questions that we're trying to work out, we're trying to actually find that taped interview right now in our system. So I'm not going to announce who the guest is going to be for the third hour until we can actually be certain that that interview will be coming up through the magic of computer programming and radio technology. So we're going to wait and see on that, and I will announce it once we have found the file on that interview. But it is a biggie, a real biggie, and we know that our audience is going to be pleased with this interview once we get it up. If we don't have it on tonight, for some reason, we will have it and on the next broadcast. So this is, once again, the political cesspool. Of course, we'll be taking callers at some point during the program. We always look forward to hearing from our listeners and what their opinions are. We have an outstanding audience out there. I've never been disappointed in a caller any time that I've been on this show. We have always had excellent callers and people calling in with really, really sharp, pointed questions and interesting commentary. So we'll be looking forward to that. Of course, there are many different issues on the minds of the American people right now. There are a number of industries in crisis, particularly automobile industry and the financial industry. And, of course, on this program, we try to talk about all of the issues that are important to Americans and the American public in terms of how we will be affected, particularly European Americans. And, of course, the automobile industry is one of the most important things I think we could discuss on this show. And I have some thoughts on that, which will be coming up once we have completed our interviews with our guests. So stick with us, everybody. As you know, we always try to bring you a program that not only excites, but maybe disturbs you as well.
There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages. Never know when an emergency will strike. Whether it's a hurricane, tornado, blizzard, or earthquake, everyone listening to me right now
could find themselves without food and power with little or no advance warning. With over 14 years' experience, Ready Made Resources stands ready to assist you to be prepared. The K-Tiden Vario Microfilter is a lightning-fast water filtering system that removes waterborne bacteria and cysts, and it also improves the taste of water. Ready Made Resources carries Mountain House Foods, the number one lightweight, compact, great-tasting food choice that you should have stored away as part of your emergency preparedness kit. There's free shipping on both of these items. For more information, go online at www.readymaderesources.com or call toll-free 1-800-627-3809. Ready Made Resources is here to help you be prepared.
It's true. Gold and silver have been a source of true wealth for years. In fact, people around the world have used these metals to buy and sell goods for over 5,000 years. And gold and silver will continue to be a source of true wealth for the foreseeable future. If you look back in history, you'll see that all fiat currencies have failed to maintain wealth or failed altogether. But gold has always protected its holder, a true asset, usable to anyone around the globe. As the value of your Federal Reserve note continues to depreciate, gold will be your only insurance. As an example, in 1975, you could buy a $40,000 home with 1,000 gold coins. Today, that same house is $400,000, yet you can still buy it with 1,000 gold coins. To find out more information on how to protect your wealth, call Republic Trading at 1-800-691-7898. That's 1-800-691-7898.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Let's return to the political cesspool and our own bunch of rebels, the political cesspool guys.
So today, I'll be standing right by his side when they say he's a rebel and he'll never, ever be any good. He's a rebel because he never, never does what he should.
And welcome back, everybody, to the political cesspool. I'm Bill Rowland, sitting in tonight for James Edwards, and our first guest tonight is Dr. Kevin R.C. Gutzmann, who is an American historian and New York Times best-selling author. Dr. Gutzmann is an associate professor of history and non-Western cultures at Western Connecticut State University. Professor Gutzmann received his B.A. from the University of Texas and then went on to earn a Ph.D. from the University of Virginia in 1999. He is a columnist at LouRockwell.com, and his latest book, Who Killed the Constitution?, The Fate of American Liberty from World War I to George W. Bush, is now out, and it was co-authored with Thomas E. Woods. You can find out more about that book. We'll give you a website here a little later. Dr. Gutzmann, are you on air with us?
Here we go, yes.
And welcome to the program. Now, Dr. Gutzmann, getting into your book, that's a pretty provocative title, Who Killed the Constitution? And I would imagine you have some answers for us along those lines. And I'll ask you straight out, who killed the Constitution?
Well, actually, the theme of the book is that there's a kind of bipartisan consensus in the federal government that the Constitution need not be respected. That is, people in all three branches of the federal government behave as if there were no limits on their power. And the reason why we have a written Constitution was precisely to limit the power of people who hold office. So we've got 12 case studies in Who Killed the Constitution, beginning with chapter on the draft in World War I and going all the way down to President George W. Bush and his use of what are called signing statements. And we show that both parties in all three branches, by the end of the 20th century and beginning of the 21st, behaved as if the Constitution just didn't exist.
Well, now, I would say that the various branches of government began their collaboration against the Constitution in 1913 with the establishment of the Federal Reserve and really a dramatic change in the way that senators were brought into the Senate and different changes in the way the government did business. Do you see that as essentially laying the groundwork for what would happen later on with the virtually all branches of government ignoring constitutional restraint?
Well, like you, I certainly think that the 17th Amendment and the 16th Amendment, that is the one changing the way senators were elected and the one establishing congressional power to tax income, were very important, and that ultimately what they meant was a radical centralization of power in Washington. But those were formal constitutional amendments. And the phenomenon that Tom and I are pointing out in Who Killed the Constitution is not that there have been radical changes to the actual document, but that there's come to be a political culture in Washington that says we need not adhere to what the Constitution actually says. So it's, I agree with you that those are revolutionary changes, but they still reflected a culture that said you had to respect the Constitution, and that's not what we have today.
Well, certainly the way the government, I would say, passes laws, the various branches of Congress, for instance, pass laws that are clearly unconstitutional and then put them in force, and there simply seems to be no way, however, to force the government to enforce the Constitution. What method would the people have, for instance, if they elect politicians who ignore the Constitution? How is the Constitution ever going to be enforced?
Well, the only way, ultimately, that we can ensure that the Constitution is enforced is by ceasing to reelect people who ignore it. And I don't see a lot of hope at the moment that either party is going to do that. We do have, a majority of Republicans in the U.S. House who, for example, oppose the recent unconstitutional gift of $700 billion to Secretary Paulson. But ultimately, there was bipartisan agreement. Both of the presidential nominees of the major parties agreed that we should just have this radical, gigantic expenditure for God knows what, and without ever mentioning the question where they got constitutional authority for that. Now in Washington, there's debate about the question whether the taxpayers should give a $25 billion gift to the big three in the UAW, again, without ever asking, well, where exactly in the Constitution does it say that Congress can take money from everybody else and give it to the UAW? The answer is it doesn't say that. And actually, that's the kind of legislation that was intended to be unconstitutional. But neither party will make that point. And, of course, in case it were taken to the courts, they would say that nobody had standing to bring such a suit. But even if they heard it, they would not have any objection to such a bill. So what's happened is, though, that there's been a change over the last century where formerly, a century ago, people actually thought that the Constitution meant something, and that if you wanted to make a radical change to the policy of the federal government, you might need to amend it. Nowadays, we just ignore the Constitution in doing this. So, for example, in the late 19th century, there was a very powerful and popular political movement throughout the country called the Temperance Movement, which you've probably heard of. Beginning in Maine, in the middle of the 19th century, states passed laws saying no production or distribution of alcoholic beverages. And by the beginning of the 20th century, this had become so popular a movement that the people who favored it passed a constitutional amendment banning production and distribution of alcoholic beverages. Now, of course, we know that prohibition of alcohol was a big failure, but the point I'm making is that when people in Congress thought that this was a good idea, they thought, well, we don't have any power under the Constitution. There's nothing in the Constitution we can point to that says Congress can ban alcoholic beverages, so we need an amendment if we're going to do this. Flash forward a couple of decades, and when people in Congress decided they wanted to begin banning other things like cocaine and heroin, hashish, marijuana, and so on, they did not think they needed to amend the Constitution. They just passed laws saying you couldn't distribute or possess these things. And where did they get authority to do that? The answer is they didn't have any authority to do that, but they did it anyway. So what had transpired between the Prohibition Amendment and the legislative bans on these other products was simply the death of the idea that the Constitution limited the powers of Congress.
Let me ask you this question. Is the problem really that the Constitution, in a sense, is a flawed instrument, that, for instance, interpretations of the Constitution are manipulated or are abused by people in power, including the judicial branch, legislating from the bench, for instance, or the living document interpretations, that perhaps the Constitution is not as sound as a barrel, in a sense, that, for instance, I know that there are arguments against the possession of firearms, of keeping in, to keep and bear arms, is on sort of the vague language that's in the Constitution about well-regulated militias and so forth. Do you consider perhaps that the Constitution is flawed in its very structure that allows for these abuses to take place?
Well, there are actually, you may not recognize it, but there are actually two parts to that question. One has to do with whether the language of the Constitution really is obscure in the way the judges have taught us to think that it is. And my contention is, well, no, it's really not obscure in the way the judges have taught us to think that it is. So, for example, the Bill of Rights was intended solely as a limitation on the policymaking powers of the federal government. And virtually everything we think of the Bill of Rights meaning nowadays has to do with limiting powers of state governments. The entire idea that the federal Bill of Rights is a limitation on powers of state governments and means that you can't have prayer in school, say, or you can't have any prohibition or regulation of abortion, or that you have to read a felon Miranda rights before you can accept his confession, or that you can't execute somebody for raping a child. These are all invented limitations on state officials' policy-making prerogatives. They have nothing really to do with the Bill of Rights, because the Bill of Rights, again, was intended solely to limit the power of the federal government. And anybody who studies the history of this question for 10 minutes knows that what I'm saying about it is true. So the fact that the judges have taught us to believe the opposite is really a relic of the miseducation that's very common in the United States about these questions. You know, it used to be a century ago that if you went to law school, for example, and studied the Constitution, what you would read would be history. It would be the history of the drafting and ratification, that is, the formal adoption by the states of the Constitution. Nowadays, however, if you study the Constitution in law school, what you're going to read is not history, but a thick volume of judicial opinions, things past judges have written about it. And in many ways, those judicial opinions are at variance with, in fact, in a lot of ways, they're entirely opposite what the Constitution actually was intended to mean. The same method of instructing people about the Constitution is also used in undergraduate college courses and even very commonly in high schools. People start by saying, you know, when it comes, for example, to the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment, well, what did Justice Black say about it in 1947? Which has nothing at all to do with what the First Amendment was supposed to mean when it was actually adopted in 1791. And again, as I said, it's not really a bone of contention among historians whether that's true, but it's the fact that this myth about the Constitution is so widespread has to do with just a lack of education.
The First Amendment of the Constitution that seems to have been brought under threat by what we'll call it collectively government power was actually the Tenth Amendment.
Right.
It seems that throughout the history of the Constitution, that the Tenth Amendment was always the one, was the tenderloin district of the Constitution, so to speak,
right,
the one which was the first to get abused. What was the, prior to the war between the states, prior to the Civil War, what was the worst violation, do you think, of the Constitution that sort of led to further abuses, as the Founding Fathers would have said?
Oh, boy. In case your listeners don't know what it is, the Tenth Amendment is the one that says that whatever powers are not delegated to the federal government by the Constitution.
Okay. Hold that thought, Dr. Guzman. We'll come back right after break and pick it up there.
Right after these messages.
And people say we monkey around, but we're too busy singing to put anybody down.
Now that the election is over and the shock is beginning to wear off, Ready Reserve Foods, in an effort to get as many Americans prepared for the promised changes of the new administration and to help you and your family survive the global economic crash. Ready Reserve is offering the pre-inauguration special. Between now and January 20th, 2009, all food units U1 through U7 are being offered at wholesale prices. That's a 33% savings. A year's supply of meals starts as low as 73 cents per meal. Ready Reserve Food offers only the highest quality dehydrated food, packed in double enameled cans in an inert nitrogen atmosphere, allowing a 15-plus year shelf life. Ready Reserve has been manufacturing since 1972, giving them the freedom to offer you amazing savings. Great tasting Ready Reserve foods at wholesale prices. Order now at ReadyReserveFoods.com or call today 1-800-453-2202. That's 1-800-453-2202.
Do you know the truth about cancer treatments? Do you realize that with all presently accepted methods, you are not correctly attacking the cancer and you are mostly fighting to survive the treatment? Do you realize that mutilating surgery, burning and poisoning of your entire system are totally unnecessary? But now it's cancer's turn to die with LaserMed Incorporated's patented methodology. Without cutting, bleeding, drugs, or damaging radiation, we can destroy skin cancer and breast tumors of any size without adverse side effects at our physician's office. Laser technology at its best. For more information, visit www.lasermedinc.com on the web. That's www.lasemedinc.com.
Call now, 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528. 501-255-0528.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, fen, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
And we're back with our guest, Dr. Kevin Gutzman. I mispronounced his name at the beginning of the show. I apologize for that. And before the break, we were discussing the 10th Amendment and where it stands in the Constitution. Dr. Gutzman, go ahead with what we were discussing, the 10th Amendment and violations that occurred against the 10th Amendment, let's say, before the Civil War.
Okay, well, the 10th Amendment is the one that says that whatever powers are not delegated to the federal government by the Constitution or denied by it to the states are reserved to the states respectively or to the people. Or in plain English, it says, if the Constitution doesn't say the federal government can do it, that means it's a state power. It's being reserved to the states. And really beginning in 1824, Henry Clay, who was the Speaker of the House, prominent senator, central figure in the Whig Party, which was a precursor to today's Republican Party, made a program of what he called internal improvements. And that is, he wanted the federal government to be in the business of building roads and canals throughout the country. And people like Thomas Jefferson and James Madison both held that this policy was unconstitutional, that the Constitution didn't say that Congress could spend money for road building. And actually, we have a chapter in Who Killed the Constitution about this question of federal money for road building. You know, in the first two decades of the 19th century, President Jefferson and then President Madison, his successor, each served two terms. They both repeatedly called for Congress to spend money on road building, but Madison said in one of his annual messages, if you find, he's talking to Congress here, he said, if you find that there's a defect in your own authority to do this, you should take the use the remedy that the Constitution provides. In other words, you should amend the Constitution to give yourselves power to spend money on road building. When Congress appropriated money for road building, even though he had asked for it, Madison vetoed the bill because he said, you don't have constitutional authority to do this. You've got to amend the Constitution before you can adopt this bill. The Speaker was shocked because he said, I thought this was Madison's bill, but Madison said, you know, you can't do it without amending the Constitution. Flash forward to the 1950s, President Eisenhower calls on Congress to adopt a policy of having an interstate highway system, and he asks Congress to appropriate money for construction of highways throughout the country. Congress passes the bill, and the president signs it, so now we have an interstate highway system. What changed between Madison in 1817 and Eisenhower in the 1950s? Was there an amendment to the Constitution to give Congress power to do this? No, there wasn't. Did the original intention of the people about the powers of Congress change? No, it didn't. What changed between Madison and Eisenhower was the death of the Constitution. That is the end of the idea that Congress's powers came only from the Constitution. And now we have the idea that Congress essentially can spend money on anything it wants to spend money on.
Well, I would submit that what changed in particular was the military-industrial complex, which Eisenhower named himself. And I think the interstate highway system was built on the pretext that it was a military necessity, that is to move, you know, forces across the country rapidly in the event of a military emergency. So, I mean, are things like the what we call the military-industrial complex, are they part of the problem when it comes to enforcing the Constitution and bringing, you know, the Constitution into line with the political system?
Well, it's true that when Vice President Nixon first called for Congress to implement this project of having an interstate highway system, he didn't mention the idea that it would be useful militarily. However, when Congress finally got around to there was no mention of that idea. So it was just kind of pro forma nod in that direction. And, of course, everybody knows today that, you know, you probably don't need an interstate through your town for any military reason. So I think it was actually more of an excuse. And actually, what the history of our Constitution is a history of people in Congress, in the executive, in the courts, using excuses, using trumped-up, bogus interpretations of particular constitutional provisions to do basically anything they wanted to do. Judges want to legislate. Congress wants to spend money on things it doesn't have constitutional authority to spend money on. The president wants to make war overseas without asking congressional authorization to do so. They all claim they have a right to do these things, and they can point to bogus, made-up arguments, a lot of which we detail in Who Killed the Constitution.
Well, that's, of course, again, gets back to the problem, I think, of the Constitution, that there always seems to be a leak around it or a hole in it somewhere, that these politicians are determined to discover some method of circumventing the Constitution for some particular either big works project or for their own personal ideologies or for the ideology of one party over another.
That's exactly right. And actually, in the first decade under the new Constitution, beginning in 1789 in the Washington administration, what was called the Federalist Party, that is the nationalizing, centralizing party, had control of the federal government, and they adopted several unconstitutional policies. At the end of that decade, however, Thomas Jefferson and James Madison's party defeated the Federalists, and within 20 years, the Federalist Party had ceased to exist. Its centralization was so unpopular, it ceased to exist. When the Republicans under Jefferson came into office, some of the leading figures in his party said, okay, now that we've gotten rid of the Federalists, we've gotten rid of their Sedition Act, which made it a felony to say anything critical of the government. Actually, the Federalists imprisoned several leading newspaper editors and even a Republican congressman for criticizing President
Adams. Dr. Gutzman, we got a break here. Come back, hold your thought, and we'll get back to, again, the Sedition Act and other things, other ways to get around the Constitution. This is almost a handbook on that.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
That's just a little bit more than the law of the land.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
With recent international flight from the dollar, it's confusing. How to protect your wealth against this invisible loss of purchasing power? Let the Republic Trading Group help you see through the fog and deception of the fiat money masters. The fact is, gold is and always has been the only insurance against the erosion of your wealth. So put the power of gold to work for you and rest assured your purchasing power is secure. Buy your gold from the most dependable and reputable dealer, Republic Trading Group. Call today 1-800-691-7898 and let Robbie Noel help you see through the fog. When you support the Republic Trading Group, you're also supporting Republic Broadcasting Network. So visit our new and improved website today, republictradinggroup.net, for daily news and information from around the world. Don't be confused. Call Republic Trading Group today, 1-800-691-7898, and lock in the power of gold.
Howdy, gardeners. This is Mike from Baker Creek Heirloom Seed Company. We carry America's largest selection of heirloom seed, all non-hybrid, non-GMO, and non-Monsanto. We offer 1,200 varieties that our grandparents grew, vegetables that helped us survive the Great Depression, varieties that our founding fathers grew, and varieties that not only survive but thrive in today's gardens. All our vegetable seed is open-pollinated, which means you can save your own seed from generation to generation. Want to learn more about heirloom seeds and what the government is doing to control our food supply? If so, request our free 124-page seed catalog. And today, we offer you our Homestead Collection, 60 full-size packs of pure heirloom seed for $83 postpaid. That's 60 fresh packets of seed for just $83. Call us today to order your free catalog or our seed collection at 866-OLD-SEED. That's 866-OLD-SEED, or go online to oldseed.com. That's oldseed.com.
Deep in the Brazilian rainforest of the Amazon grows the acai berry. Considered to be one of nature's most complete and healthy foods, the acai berry is loaded with antioxidants, amino acids, essential omegas, fibers, phytonutrients, and protein. A superfood? Yes. YourLivingFruit.com now brings the acai product, the timing, the company, the opportunity, and the cause to you. Some of the health benefits associated with the acai berry are increase in sustained energy, help with cholesterol management, improvement of digestive system, strengthening immune system, and more. Acai berry boasts 10 times the antioxidant benefits of grapes and twice that of blueberries. Are acai berry health benefits right for you? Is the opportunity right for you? Find out at YourLivingFruit.com. YourLivingFruit.com will show you the remarkable and continually documented health benefits of the acai berry. Visit YourLivingFruit.com. That's YourLivingFruit.com.
And now, let's return to the political cesspool.
And welcome back, everybody, and welcome back to our guest, Dr. Kevin Gutzmann, who is the co-author of the book, Who Killed the Constitution? The Fate of American Liberty from World War I to George W. Bush. Before the break, Dr. Gutzmann, you were discussing the Sedition Act and how that was really a political football with regards to the Constitution. Go ahead and finish up your thoughts on that.
Well, what I was saying was that in the first decade under our current Constitution, the 1790s, you had a party that it was in power that basically behaved as if the Constitution didn't limit congressional authority at all. And what happened was by the end of that decade, this had become so unpopular a party that Thomas Jefferson's Republicans took control of the government. And within 20 years, the Federalists, the old majority, had ceased to exist. The party was gone. But the interesting thing about it was that in 1801, when Jefferson's party came into power, there was a serious debate within the party what to do about the fact that the Federalists had been violating the Constitution with laws like the Sedition Act, with acts like the Presidential Neutrality Proclamation, with the chartering of a federally chartered bank. These are all things Congress and the President didn't have constitutional authority to do. So one faction in the Republican Party told Jefferson, look, we need to amend the Constitution and make explicit Congress does not have authority to charter a bank. Congress does not have authority to pass a Sedition Act. The President doesn't have authority to issue neutrality proclamations. And on the other hand, you had James Madison telling Jefferson, well, okay, we've had 12 amendments to the Constitution. We need to teach the people to revere it And if we amend it too often, they'll think it's just another law, so they won't respect it. Jefferson accepted Madison's argument, but the point that the people who wanted to amend the Constitution and explicitly outlaw the Federalist laws were making was that, of course, if you would never pass a statute and say this cannot be amended, because we know that when you pass a new law, people are going to find ways around it. And John Taylor of Caroline, one of the leading Republican proponents of amendments making clear that the Federalist laws had been unconstitutional, there couldn't be another Sedition Act, for example, said, well, if people have an incentive to get around an everyday statute, how much more incentive do politicians have to find ways to get around the Constitution? We should have a regular tradition of amending the Constitution to ensure that the politicians have to follow it. But, as I said, he lost the argument, Madison won, and what that's meant is we now have a tradition of virtually never having a formal amendment to the Constitution. We don't say President Bush has had all these signing statements saying he's going to ignore the statutes, so we're going to amend the Constitution and say you can't say you're going to ignore the statutes in the signing statement, for example. And what that's meant is over time, every time the politicians have found a new way around the Constitution, instead of amending the Constitution to make clear they couldn't do that, we've just said, okay, that's a new precedent. This is a new way that future people can ignore the Constitution. Now, 200 years after the Constitution went into effect, basically 95% of what goes on in Washington is getting around the Constitution, not following it.
Well, we've got a new administration coming in, and one of the big questions, for instance, and it's a constitutional issue, it's a very important constitutional issue, is what if Barack Obama is not, in fact, a citizen of the United States? How can he be prevented from taking office, given that the Constitution is ignored by the government and the legislature and the Senate entirely?
Well, that's a very interesting issue. Actually, my previous book was called The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. That was a kind of constitutional history of the United States, beginning before the Revolution, all the way up to the present. And as I was doing publicity, I did over 85 radio interviews, lots of newspaper and TV and so on. As I was doing these things, book signings, people would say to me, well, yeah, we know liberal judges act that way. Liberal judges ignore the Constitution. And what I wanted to show in this current book, Who Killed the Constitution, is that, no, it's not only liberals and it's not only judges. It's actually a bipartisan consensus in all three branches. And this question of President-elect Obama's citizenship is a good example. Recently, we had this election for president, and we had two candidates nominated by the major parties who were, as far as I can tell, not constitutionally qualified to be president. So it's not clear at all that Obama was actually born in the United States. He's kept secret the records of his tenure at in college, apparently, or at least possibly, because it would show that he was not a natural-born citizen of the United States. And he doesn't want to produce a birth certificate, which he could easily do if he actually had been born in Hawaii. You know, it makes people suspicious. And you might think, well, then why didn't John McCain make an issue of that in the presidential campaign? And the answer is, well, he wasn't constitutionally qualified to be president either, because he was born in the Panama Canal Zone at a time when, if you were born there, you were not a natural-born citizen. Actually, it was the year after he was born, McCain, in the Canal Zone, that Congress passed a law saying you're a natural-born citizen if you're born in the Canal Zone. So we have these two guys who are both, perhaps both, not qualified to be president, and what they did was essentially they agreed not to talk about this issue. It wouldn't help either one of them, so neither one of them talked about it. And that is the way the Constitution has come to work. Both parties agree, well, we'll ignore it. If you're a Republican judge or you legislate, we Democrats in the Congress will agree we have no limit on our power to legislate. And our guy in the White House or your guy in the White House, both of them are free to make foreign policy regardless of what Congress wants. What a wonderful system we have. Who loses in this? Well, who loses are Americans who have more centralized, less accountable government than they'd like, who have more wars than they would ever vote for, who have endless taxes to support programs by the federal government that the federal government doesn't actually have any authority to impose on us. So it's a terrible situation.
Well, would the question of an Obama presidency, as far as whether he's entitled to become president, I guess would go to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, I don't think it's a kind of issue that could come to a court because under the Constitution, federal courts in Article 3, Section 2 have authority to decide what are called cases and controversies. Those are the two words the Constitution uses, cases and controversies. And if you don't have what's called a case or a controversy, a legal one, then you don't have what the courts call standing to bring a suit. And they have said that you can't challenge, an individual taxpayer can't challenge an unconstitutional congressional program as unconstitutional because he's not affected in any peculiar way. You have to, you can't just say, I'm a taxpayer, so I don't think the Department of Housing and Urban Development should exist anymore. There's nothing in the Constitution that says Congress can spend money on these things. You have to show that you've been affected in some peculiar way. I don't think there's any voter in America who's going to be able to say that he's affected by Obama taking office despite not being qualified in a peculiar way. In other words, I don't think there's going to be anybody who has standing to bring that kind of a suit. So if he's going to be kept from office on the ground of the citizenship issue, it's going to have to be the Electoral College or the Congress that decides that'll happen. It's not going to be a court saying, no, he can't become president.
But if he's not a citizen and he does become president, if let's say there's no doubt that he is not a natural born American citizen and he does take office, isn't that part of the Constitution negated at that point? It just becomes an artifact?
Yes, right, like the Tenth Amendment. Yes, actually, you know, you've asked me that question earlier about the Tenth Amendment. When I was new graduate of the University of Texas Law School in 1990, I took what's called the Bar Review course, and maybe your listeners don't know this, but if you want to become an attorney, basically what you do is you get a law degree, and then for about 3 months you take what's called a Bar Review course where you learn all the practical things about being a lawyer that you didn't learn in law school. And in my Bar Review course, which was run by one of the national Bar Review companies, they told us, okay, when you get to the multiple choice portion of the bar review exam, of the bar exam, when you're taking this test to become a lawyer in Texas, and you get to the multiple choice section, if one of the options you're offered is the 10th Amendment, you know that is never correct. Okay, do not use that as your answer on the multiple choice section. And why was that? You know, I remember her laughing when she was saying this, but it wasn't funny because it was true. People in the federal system have just agreed we're going to ignore this part of the Constitution. And it's much in the same way as Obama and McCain appear to have agreed they would ignore that question about citizenship in the Constitution. And the Constitution is just shot through with provisions that are ignored every day.
Well, being ignored every day, then we have to concede the Constitution is, in fact, dead. I mean, it's essentially part of the taxidermist's art now. I mean, it's there for public viewing, but not really for the exercise by the citizens.
But it does actually serve a function, and that is to legitimate what goes on in Washington, because people are told that Ben Franklin and George Washington, Governor Morris and James Wilson, Alexander Hamilton and James Madison, they made this government, and so you should love it. If you want to immigrate to America, you have to swear you're going to uphold it, and so on. And so although they ignore it every day, it's a kind of totem that we all have to bow to, and it helps to legitimate, building a space bus or paying money for schools in Iraq or whatever other dumb thing they're doing.
So it's become the equivalent of Lenin's tomb in
Yes.
Russia. That is, you go there and you sort of look at the waxy
Right.
remains, but it really has no power.
Right. He's been dead since 1922. That's right.
And the Constitution's been dead since, let's say,
more or less the same time.
About the same time. Right. So we embalmed both of our symbols of power, I guess, or the power at the same time, interestingly enough. Okay, what we know from Obama so far is that he has nominated he'll become the next Attorney General, Eric Holder. I think probably one of the most overlooked and most powerful positions in the United States government. And there are many who believe that he's going to restrict free speech on the Internet through probably the use of hate crime laws, which are already cropping up all over Europe and other parts of the world. If these hate crime laws are passed, does that essentially doom free speech?
Well, my subject is whether these things are constitutional. The question of the contours of freedom of speech is a different issue, but the Constitution actually grants Congress power to make very few kinds of criminal laws. You know, it says Congress can outlaw basically counterfeiting, piracy. Then in the 14th Amendment, it can adopt legislation as may be necessary to ensure the equal protection of the laws and due process are respected by the state governments. But these were also intended to be narrow provisions. So I don't think there's anything in the Constitution that justifies Congress passing those kinds of laws in the first place. I guess I'd just leave it there. I don't think they have any authority to do that. Whether we agree to let them do that is a different matter. And it seems that nowadays people are willing to let the federal government do basically anything it wants to do without ever asking, where does the Constitution say you get authority to do these things? You know, in the first debate between McCain and Obama, they talked for 97 minutes, and neither one of them ever used the word Constitution. So this is apparently what Americans are willing to accept. They don't mind having a government that has no Constitution at all. You know, the reason why we have a written Constitution was precisely to limit the power of people who hold federal office. You could have had a president, you could have had a Senate without having a written Constitution, just as in Britain they don't have a written Constitution. They have a House of Lords and a House of Commons. They have, you know, a prime minister who runs the executive branch and so on. The reason we had a written one was to say, okay, this is what you people can do and no more than that. But nowadays, despite the fact that we have it, we're just used to the idea that if there's a hurricane and, you know, people lose their homes, it must somehow be the government's fault. It must be the president who's responsible. Why didn't he do something about the weather in New Orleans already? You know, why didn't he? He's incompetent.
Well, now, I've heard talk all my life that the big solution to our problems would be, in terms of the authority of the Constitution, would be a constitutional convention. Do you ever see that happening as far as making a real overhaul of the Constitution to put in amendments that could be enforced and amendments that would limit the power of government?
Well, we don't have one for the same reason as Madison gave in 1801 for not amending the Constitution, as I was describing earlier. You know, we have this Madisonian tradition of thinking that amending the Constitution is a bad thing. And what that assumes is that if you don't amend the Constitution by having a formal amendment through Congress or through a convention, that somehow the Constitution isn't changing. But really the system we live with is one in which federal judges amend the Constitution basically every day, you know. People in Congress adopt new unconstitutional laws every day, and then those become precedents for future ones. So if we don't have a convention or we don't have Congress pass and the states ratify an amendment, we're just living under a situation in which we amend the Constitution by unconstitutional means. I guess you can infer from that, sure, I favor it. I favor basically any mechanism you can think of that would somehow right the balance between the completely unfettered federal government and what we're supposed to be and formerly were sovereign states. That is the principle of decentralized republicanism, which was the principle that the American Revolution was for, you know, deciding almost all questions through elections to your state legislature. That's why they fought the revolution. That's what the king was trying to undo. And nowadays we just accept, yeah, you know, whatever happens. I mean, if people don't want to buy Fords, then we need to have Congress pass a law saying we're going to give a lot of money to Ford. Because we don't want Ford to go broke. Why don't we? Well, because a lot of people in Michigan are going to vote for the other party if our party doesn't vote to give Ford a lot of money. So if you don't buy Fords in Tennessee and Mississippi, why, next thing you know, you're going to have to be paying taxes to give some guy at Ford a job. This has no relationship whatsoever to the Constitution, but people accept that this is a perfectly valid thing for the people in Washington to be doing. As long as Americans don't care to have freedom, as long as they don't care to have limited government, they're not going to have it.
Well, and we've become a really knee-jerk democracy as opposed to a structured republic. Though.
Yes, I mean, it takes educated citizens to have a republic, and it takes nothing but a mob to have a democracy. You're right.
It's the tyranny of the mob, essentially,
yes.
in the threat of, well, for instance, I think we know that should some effort be made to prevent Obama from becoming president, because it would be unconstitutional for him to assume the presidency, I think we know that the mob would take over at that point. There would be mob action in a sense.
I think that would be a very ugly situation, surely.
And so to avoid that, to avoid enforcing the Constitution, enforcing the Constitution by avoiding mob action, in a mob violence in a sense.
Well,
where is this going to lead?
I think there seems to be a kind of bipartisan consensus that that election is such a good thing that, you know, it's more important than mere constitutional quibble over whether he's actually qualified. You know, so McCain said the night he lost the election, wow, it's a great thing that I lost.
Well, that certainly
maybe we could agree with him about that, but
I wouldn't be surprised if he actually voted for Obama. We've got a break coming up, ladies and gentlemen. We'll be back after our break with Dr. Kevin Guzman. We're going to break. That's about all I can do. I'm just not accustomed to the breaks yet.
Don't go away. There's plenty more of the political cesspool coming your way right after these messages.
Here's something. It doesn't matter if you're white, black, red, purple, thin, fat, or oblong. If you're eating food, you need to clean out the inside of your body. Why? Because undigested food and toxic chemicals build up in the digestive tract every day. If you think this can't hurt you, think again. It already has. Indigestion, bloating, gas, irregularity, and constipation are all connected to this toxic buildup. Here's what you can do about it. Take a supplement called AlloCleanse. It's all natural, and it gently cleanses the entire digestive tract. All that leftover junk inside your body gets flushed away, and your bathroom habits suddenly become a whole lot smoother. Laugh all you want, but it's true. And it's why millions of people use AlloCleanse daily. They get more energy, they're healthier, and they look better. You'd be surprised. To try AlloCleanse risk-free, call 1-800-547-6603. That's 1-800-547-6603. Or log on to www.republicbroadcasting.org and click onto the AlloEase colon banner and learn more about this product.
If you can handle the truth, pick up a copy of Plain Truth by John Tate, a concise critique of contemporary American government for its refusal to acknowledge our true origins as a Western Christian nation. Plain Truth will inform and inspire readers who are eager to partake in the long and difficult process necessary to restore the American Republic. As citizens of this great republic, we can perform no more important task than realizing our duty to preserve our unique culture, heritage, and people, despite a formidable foe within our own nation. Read Plain Truth and you'll discover the importance of identifying the cause, exploring the consequences, and discovering solutions to our unfortunate situation. The debate must shift toward a focus upon culture, history, and nationalism. Plain Truth by John Tate proves that racial diversity and Republican government are incompatible with one another. Plain Truth by John Tate is available through Amazon, Target, Borders, and Barnes & Noble bookstores.
Are you new to freeze-dried foods? These fine, easily storable foods were first developed for the U.S. space program. Today, the U.S. military and the U.S. submarine service enjoy using these products extensively. Freeze-dried foods typically maintain their high nutritional value in excess of 30 years. Why store emergency food? Keeping food on hand for emergencies protects you the same way as does insurance on your home or car. With Freeze Dry Guy freeze-dried foods in your food reserve, you can be ready for just about any unexpected crisis. In today's turbulent times of uncertainty, global crisis, world market collapse, stock market volatility, increased frequency of natural and man-made disasters, there has never been a better time to get a survival insurance policy. Take the necessary steps to protect your family in these uncertain times. Visit freezedryguy.com or call 866-404-FOOD, 866-404-3663. We pay the freight within the lower 48 states.
Welcome back to the Political Cesspool. To get on the show, call toll-free at 1-800-313-9443. And now here's your host of the Political Cesspool, James Edwards.
Back again with our guest, Dr. Kevin Guzman, who has been discussing the Constitution and essentially the death of that document, the document that is supposed to protect us from the government, and which has, of course, been under constant, unceasing attack almost since the document came into existence by, of course, venal politicians and power brokers outside of the system. Dr. Guzman, as we sort of finish up here, we always ask a question to our guests, particularly if they hold a particular view. What is essentially the solution for Americans who are watching daily their constitutional liberties being washed away by either government abuse or by economic abuse or by the effort to push us into a global system? What should Americans do?
Well, I think the first thing you have to do is educate yourself about what this constitutional system is supposed to look like. Actually, I wrote a book about that called The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. I think the chief problem we have is that people are too prone to defer to judges and politicians, if you want to distinguish between those two groups, about what the Constitution means. And then they're too prone to say, well, I accept that the judges or the politicians are able to do these things they're doing. You know, don't accept this. It's just not true. It's not true that you can't check federal judges who legislate. It's not true that you have to accept taxes to pay for schools in Afghanistan. So if your local politicians tell you there's nothing they can do about that, vote them out and get new ones.
Well, let's try to take a caller. We're going to ask for callers at 1-800-313-9443. If you have any questions or comments for Dr. Guzman, we might be able to have time for one question if a caller wants to call in now. Okay, put them on. Are you there, caller?
Yeah.
Have you got a question for Dr. Guzman?
Yeah. How many states now are there lawsuits against concerning the Obama citizenship that you know of?
Oh, I don't know the answer to that.
Are you familiar with the new one in California?
No.
Well, the deal with that is Alan Keyes filed it. And since he was actually on the ballot in California, he says that that gives him standing because he has, if Obama was on the ballot but not eligible, then he has legitimate damages because Obama took votes that he could have got.
Mm-hmm. Well, it seems more likely to me that if Obama hadn't gotten California's electoral votes, probably McCain would have gotten them. So I think McCain would have a better argument in that regard. However, I also think that no court would decide that question. They're going to say that he doesn't have standing, and that'll be the end of that. It's going to be said to be a political issue that has to be decided by the voters or the politicians.
Well, that's an interesting question. Now, again, it comes back to the whether a court could intervene in this, and it appears that, like a steamroller, the Obama presidency is going to happen, whether it's constitutional or not. Once again, the Constitution being overrun. Dr. Guzman, we thank you for being on the show tonight, and I don't know if we're not going to have an optional break, but once again, it's Dr. Kevin Guzman, and your book is Who Killed the Constitution, and that is available at Amazon.com. Is that right?
That's correct, yes.
Well, thank you so much for being on the Political Cesspool, and we look forward to having you on again. And, is there anything else you'd like to say to the audience before we let go? Would you? And you had another book, and that was The Politically Incorrect Guide to the Constitution. Is that also available on Amazon?
Yes, it is.
Well, everybody, take a look at what Dr. Guzman has to say. Buy his book, and let's all get better educated on our constitutional rights. After the break, Philip Haddad, or Philip Haddad, I'm going to have to ask him which way he pronounces his name, because I'm not getting that right tonight.
Let me tell you why I